back to Comic Book Obscura, a podcast where I go through comic book history and do reports on its most obscure characters and series. I'm your host, Tony, and today I'm talking about the Great Lakes Avengers. The Great Lakes Avengers are a team of Avengers we could very much see in the MCU further along down the line. I mean, of course, after they wrap up the whole, Thanos incident. I think this version would fit in as like a kind of Earth-bound version of the Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it's basically just another ragtag team of losers who come together and kind of form a familial bond and, fight supervillains. But I think the difference is, I mean, and I say that because with James Gunn kind of out the door now, unfortunately, I think Guardians is probably going to be nixed after the third movie if they actually film it, which they're saying they are, but I think they're still looking for a replacement director, so we kind of don't know anything for certain yet. But with that being said, I'm sure they're going to be looking for another franchise to kind of fill that slot at some point, and I think this could be it. And I don't think that if they did do this, the Great Lakes Avengers would replace the regular Avengers movies. I think the Great Lakes Avengers would be their own thing. And even then, they might not even go with that name, because they've had other names before. Well, they've been called the Great Lakes X-Men, the Great Lakes Champions, which is the one I think they would probably go for. And the whole Avengers part of it would probably be like some running joke, which it kind of is in comics, but I'll get to that later. Now, while the comic itself isn't very good, and I don't mean like it's terrible, it's the worst thing ever, I just mean it hasn't really caught on. There doesn't seem to be like a huge fan base for it. It's kind of, if it does have a fan base, they don't seem very vocal. So I'm assuming that there either isn't one or it's very small. But that being said, I think a live action adaptation would actually work really well for these characters. Given the lack of popularity, I think it would give the filmmakers a wide creative berth. Like, they can go a wider range to kind of go really weird with it. Because, I mean, these guys would probably be taking on, like, the weirder aspects of the MCU on Earth. Like, those weird villains that everyone kind of wants to see. But then it's like, well, they wouldn't be a match for the real Avengers. So who would even bother fighting them? I think this is the answer to that. Not to mention that, once I get into each character, I think it becomes a bit more clear. Despite how goofy they're intended to be, there's a lot of potential for like a decent characterization of these individuals, and their visual designs are okay, but I think in a live action version, I think you could add a little bit more to them. And like I said, with the lack of a fan base to speak of, making alterations to suit the storytelling of the movie wouldn't come under as much heavy scrutiny or, harsh feedback as, like, if you did some drastic change to, like, Captain America or Tony Stark or Spider-Man or something like that. So, for the roster that I'm going to go through, I'm just going to stick to the main team, like, the first incarnation of this team, because along the way, some other people came in and out, and some characters died, but I'm going to stick with the first group, which is, I think, now the current group, because I think some characters come and went and came back, except for the ones that died, and I think they're more or less the same team they started with. So before I get into who everyone is, let's start with the origin. So the Great Lakes Avengers were created by John Byrne and first appeared in West Coast Avengers number 46 in July 1989. Discovered by real Avengers Hawkeye and Mockingbird, the group were trying to stop a robbery, and Hawkeye and Mockingbird were impressed by this ragtag team's moxie and eventually became mentors to the group to kind of teach them the basics of, crime fighting. Because when they first came onto the scene, none of them were actual fighters to speak of. Like, they had their powers, but none of them had been on a team before. So, you know, they had no real team dynamics going yet. And yet they managed to stop a robbery by kind of just dumb luck and, you know, sheer force of will. I mean, they had powers, so, you know, stopping bank robbers wasn't going to be too difficult, but they pulled it off. Hawkeye and Mockingbird were impressed, but they're like, hey, these guys need some training. As the series went on, it was later discovered that most of the group were actually mutants, and that led to their team name being changed to the Great Lakes X-Men. Unfortunately for them, the real X-Men caught on to this, and just seeing how embarrassing this group was, they demanded that they took the name X-Men off of their team. After that, I guess the next big name change was the Great Lakes Champions, as I mentioned earlier. This happened, I'm not sure when this happened time-wise, but basically the Thing from the Fantastic Four held like this big poker tournament amongst like all of his superhero friends, and somehow the Great Lake Avengers got invited or just showed up. I believe it was Doorman who won, and he became the champion of the poker tournament. So in celebration of this, the team was like, hey, why don't we just call ourselves the Great Lakes Champions? Like, that's kind of all there is to it. After that, during the Civil War storyline, they registered with the government, and they changed their team name to the Great Lakes Initiative, because they were supposed to be like a offshoot of the Avengers, and so any heroes operating in their area who wanted to register would kind of go to them. Or that was the idea. They were supposed to go to them, register, and then be part of that team growing the Great Lakes Avengers. But unfortunately for them, the all-new, all-different Marvel reboot happened sometime later, and they got switched back to the Great Lakes Avengers. But this time, they actually had permission to use the name Avengers, and they got relocated to Detroit. So, a couple of name changes. The rest of the superhero community, very embarrassed of these people. But at the end of the day, they are still heroes. They did have a couple of adventures. They did manage to prove themselves. It's just, you know, they're kind of goofy. But I think they've all managed to use their powers in ways that are kind of unexpected. Because in a lot of the current MCU movies, it seems like all the characters have pretty simple powers, and they use them pretty much the way you'd expect them to. There's no real creativity in what they can do, with the exception of Doctor Strange, who used his started using real magic. I mean, he used magic, but in Infinity War, he used the cool magic, the kind of magic I think a lot of people were expecting to see in his origin. I mean, it makes sense. In his origin movie, he was just learning, so, you know. But I think so far, aside from maybe Hawkeye and Ant-Man, well, Ant-Man was kind of a one-trick thing, you know. When he became Giant Man that one time, it was like, whoa. But now it's just like, okay, yeah, we know he can do that. But although they do they do some cool things with the shrinking and enlarging in the Ant-Man movies. So that's why I'm still counting it. And then with Hawkeye, I'm more referring to when he tried to stand up against Vision during Civil War for like a minute. I think it just helped show how, you know, why he's a viable member of that team. It's like, he stood no chance defeating Vision, but he went in there with a plan that luckily worked out, because Scarlet Witch, you know, picked up on what was going on and helped. But I don't think you get that a lot with the other guys, because Cap really just, I mean, it's cool when he throws a shield. Nothing against Cap, but like, really, he just punches his way out of every situation. And it's kind of the same with everybody else. Thor's just like, hey, here's some lightning. I mean, you know, I don't really expect that much from Thor, but like, I don't know. I'd like to see some cooler things going on. And that's kind of what landed me on doing an episode on the Great Lakes Avengers. Their powers are really mixed, like some weird stuff. And I think in a live action movie, well, in the comics too, it would, for the MCU, it would offer a chance to see some really weird and unusual powers be used in weird and unusual ways to solve situations. So enough about that. You know, I could go on forever on just that subject, but I think you really want to know who these people are. So I'll start with the leader of the team, Mr. Immortal. So Mr. Immortal, what are his powers? I think it's pretty obvious from his name, and it's pretty simple. He's immortal. Upon birth, Craig Hollis was visited by a cosmic being called Death Urge. Upon Craig's birth, I don't know why I phrased it that way. Upon Craig's birth, his mother asked the being to look after her newborn son, and then she died. Craig grew up calling this being Dirge for short, and he was the only one that the being would appear to. Like, only Craig could see him. And so, growing up, his father believed that this Dirge was just an imaginary friend. His father also died, but this was due to the direct intervention of Dirge, or Death Urge. He had talked Craig into burning down the house, and his father died inside while he thought Craig hid under his bed. While his father was trying to search the house for him, he died. Craig escaped. So after those events, Craig goes from one traumatic experience to another. He moves in with a foster family, which, surprise, surprise, has an abusive father. He also falls in love with his foster sister, who died, having committed suicide. You're probably starting to notice a pattern here, but you know, I'll get to the punchline in a minute. So Craig's foster sister doesn't commit suicide until later on when they're both adults. Now at this point, Craig has still been growing up talking to Death Urge, and he begs Death Urge to take his life too, so he can be with his foster sister Terry. But Death Urge refuses and then disappears and leaves Craig alone. In his depression, Craig tries to kill himself over and over again, but finds it impossible. Every time he does, he comes back to life. So, of course, later on, finding out that he's immortal, he decides to pick himself up and become a superhero, naming himself Mr. Immortal. And in trying to stop a bank robbery, he catches a bullet to the head and realizes that, well, while his powers are amazing and he can't die and there's no real risk to himself, he can't do it alone because, well, he can't fight and his only real gift is that he can't die. So he kind of needs to get a team together. So he does what anyone would do, or anyone who saw Deadpool 2 would do, and put out an ad in a paper. And so, thusly, the group begins to assemble. Starting with number 2, Dina Soar. Now, Dina Soar, which is two words, D-I-N-A-H, and then S-O-A-R, which obviously, yeah, it's a play on, or not even a play on, it's just like a respelling of the word dinosaur, which she is a dinosaur person, so there you go. She's a dinosaur lady, and I believe she comes from the Savage Land, which is the same place that known X-Men villain Sauron is from. Or Sauron? Sauron. I forget how you say his name. I'm going to say Sauron. It's unclear whether she's a mutant or some kind of genetic experiment thing from Savage Land. I'm probably going to bet mutant. She's probably... It's not stated or really even hinting at that she has any kind of relation to Sauron, but you know how comics are. Eventually, that's either probably going to happen or come up later. Who knows? It maybe you could throw it into a movie. So her powers, including razor-tipped wings and an ability to use empathy to soothe the minds of others. Obviously she can fly because she has the wings. She can also project a sonic blast, and she's not immortal in the same way that Mr. Immortal is. She just has a long lifespan. So, like, if she got shot in the head, she would die. But other than that, she could technically live, I don't know about forever, but, like, it, maybe as long as Wolverine? I don't know. Due to their, I guess, immortal-like status, Dinosaur and Mr. Immortal eventually form a romantic relationship, and then she dies. This happens while the team is fighting a villain named Maelstrom. Now, what eventually happens is, it turns out that from day one, this being called Death Urge has been causing the deaths of all the loved ones of Mr. Immortal. And eventually Mr. Immortal figures this out and confronts Death Urge and defeats him. So, you know, that whole thing finally comes full circle. Now, taking a step back a minute, with this whole Death Urge thing and the relationship between Mr. Immortal and Dinosaur, this is a good example of kind of why I kind of chose to do this episode on this team. I think this is a strong example of kind of building up the relationship between the teammates and kind of help letting that play into their backstories and the story, the overall story going forward. You know, like I said, the whole Death Urge thing kind of came full circle, and there was a purpose to it. And not to mention, like, with Mr. Immortal himself, if there was a live-action version, I think it would be a good way to kind of take a look at, like, given that his powers are immortality, and, like, one, he tried to kill himself several times, and two, and once he becomes a superhero, he still gets killed several times. And it's like, well, eventually you would think, well, that's got to do some kind of mental damage to someone. And I think that'd be, you know, doing a movie with this character, you could kind of take a look at, like, what's that like? What's it like to die over and over again and come back? Now, you could argue that that's technically already been done if you look at characters like Deadpool. Because especially in Deadpool 2, when he was trying to kill himself, knowing that he couldn't, so he was trying to find ways to figure out how. But I think this with this kind of movie, you could still have it be comedic. Because the characters themselves, like the idea of these characters is comedic. But then I think there's still room to put in some dramatic themes. And I think each of these characters has kind of like their own theme that you could kind of work. And I think with Mr. Immortal, it's you know, death and loss and that kind of thing. You know, he's grown up losing the people closest to him, not being able to die himself. And then he meets someone who was like him, who for, you know, more or less couldn't die either, or would live a long time. So it's like, well, if he got shot a million times, he would keep coming back. And as long as she doesn't get shot, she'll keep on living. So that could have been a lasting relationship. But then she gets killed too. So I think there's something there to kind of build off of for a live action version of this character. The character of Dinosaur herself, I hate to put her, like, I think for any kind of live action movie, you could take what's there and kind of build off of it. I think that would really land on the writers and the actress playing that character to really make this character stand out and be something more. Because really, if you look at the comics on paper, there's not much to the character of Dinosaur. Like, there's not a whole lot of backstory for her. Like, she was one of those characters that was like, hey, this would be cool, put her in there. And she's more or less just Mr. Immortal's girlfriend who gets killed and then, you know, drives him off. She's a girl in a refrigerator. If you don't know what that term is, it basically means whenever a heroic character loses, or it's usually specifically a girlfriend or a wife who gets killed, and that's only done to spur the hero into taking action that they were probably already going to take. You know, like for just, seriously, just for dramatic effect, basically. But I think if they did a movie, if they did more than one, you could eventually kill her off. But honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you know, why do that at all? I mean, you could, but if you want to really put the nail in the coffin for the Death Urge thing, but I don't think you have to. I think you could, you know, do a fake out where you think she's dead and go from there, but I don't think she should actually die. I think you could really make something out of this character since they didn't really do that in the comics. But that's just my opinion. So moving on. All right. So next up, we got Big Bertha. And just in case you couldn't understand what I just said, this character is Big Bertha. Her real name, Ashley Crawford. She's a mutant with the power to enlarge or increase her body mass to a form that's similar to another X-Men villain, the Blob. So basically think the Blob, but the girl version. Except she doesn't stay that way. Her real figure is actually, she basically has supermodel status. That's what her normal appearance is. But then her superpower allows her to gain mass to the point where she looks like the Blob. Now, so with that in mind, she has been, she has had several lucrative offers, but she chooses to stay with the Great Lakes Avengers once she joins the team. For some reason, she sees them as a kind of surrogate family. And I say for some reason, because her backstory is never really gone into. So it's never really said, like, where she's from or, you know, why before the Great Lakes Avengers, she never really took on any kind of, like, really real supermodel gigs. I think she has taken smaller jobs just to get by, but she's never really become magazine cover status supermodel prior to joining the Great Lakes Avengers. Now, according to her, she can distribute her mass enlargement throughout her body and, like, pick specific body parts. So, like, if she wanted to, she could, like, swell up her hands to massive proportions or increase the mass of, like, her legs or her butt or, you know, anywhere. I'll stop getting specific there because you can kind of guess what I'm getting at. But the other effect of her powers, like, when she spreads it out through her entire body, for some reason, it gives her the ability to leap long distances. And what's weird is when she wants to go back to normal, she can do a quick purge, which is exactly what it sounds like. She can vomit up all the mass and then shrink back down to normal. Now, like I said before, I think each of these characters kind of has their own, like, theme that you could kind of work into the movie. With Big Bertha, I believe it should be pretty obvious. There's kind of a body image thing to go in here. Now, I know most people are like, oh God, a movie full of messages. Are you sure that you want this to be a comedy? It's like, yes, it could still be a comedy. And I think that's what you really need to emphasize if you took these characters and made a movie. Even so, you could still do these kind of, you could still talk about these ideas and these themes without making it preachy. You really just need the right writer to put this together. I think it's still a relevant topic too. Now, what's weird about Big Bertha is, well, not weird, but like one of the things I found interesting about this character is she actually seems to embrace her larger version of herself. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of history on this character. Like in the comics themselves, she doesn't really discuss her origins. But it seems like she's less confident in her regular form than she is in her Big Bertha form. And I think that's something that might be worth digging into, like with this character, like exploring it more. Another thing is she eventually changed her name from Ashley to Bertha, making her name Bertha Crawford instead of Ashley Crawford. Which, again, it's the whole, and granted, this character came out back in 89, but I think the ideas of like body shaming and body dysmorphia and just, you know, having confidence in your appearance, I think that's just something that's existed for a while. It just seems like more recently people have been like really up in arms about it. But again, I think that could be something to look into with this character, especially given that it's not the stereotypical idea where it's like, you know, her normal self is Big Bertha, but she has the power to shrink down to normal. It's the other way, where her normal self is super beautiful and then her powers allow her to be bigger, but that's the side she embraces. So I think there's something that could be said about that. Next up is Flatman. So, oh, before I get into Flatman, I did say, just in case, I feel like I forgot to say this, but Big Bertha is a mutant as well. And I say as well because Flatman is a mutant too. So far, Mr. Immortal is mutant, Bertha is a mutant, Flatman's a mutant, and Dinosaur is possibly a mutant. She's the only one that's kind of like, that one's unknown. So, Flatman. A mutant named Matt got sick of working as a barista, and then he got sick of pretending to be Mr. Fantastic, since, as you can imagine, his powers are similar. Now, unlike Mr. Fantastic, he's a flat man. Mr. Fantastic can go flat, but his normal state is that of a fully 3D person, whereas Flatman is a 2D person. So, think more along the lines of, I was going to say the Elongated Man from DC, but I think he's not flat either. He's 3D. Plastic Man can be whatever he wants to be. And I think there's one more stretchy guy, actually. In DC. Maybe in Marvel? I think there's another stretchy guy in Marvel. But I know DC has two. I thought DC had three stretchy guys. Because there's Elongated Man, there's Plastic Man. And then, moving on, anyway. So Flatman's a 2D person with stretchy powers, basically. He changes his name to Dr. Val Ventura and hopes of becoming a superhero on his own. Now, this is just my opinion, but I think the name Val is fitting because if you take a look at this character, he doesn't wear a mask. And his costume has a blue and black color scheme similar to Mr. Fantastic costume, which is, run with it, but at the same time it seemed like he wanted to differentiate himself from Mr. Fantastic, but it's like, well, why would you wear a similar costume? But anyway, the character looks like Val Kilmer, in my opinion. I think so. I don't know if that was on purpose or not. I couldn't find anything that said yes or no to that, but when it comes to if casting ever comes up, I think that would be a name to look into. So, as the name implies, he has a flat body, he has super elasticity, and he has origami-like shape-shifting powers. So he can fold himself into things, but I don't think he can, like, I don't think like Plastic Man can literally like morph himself to look like a trash can and other objects, but I don't think Flatman can do, I don't think his powers go that far. For a long time, his teammates assumed he was gay due to his extensive knowledge of fashion, which he claims he learned while he's in college. And I guess that's one of those things you can kind of play for a joke in the movie, even though, as it turns out later, he eventually does come out and admit that he is gay. Again, another thing you can, the fact that he is gay doesn't have to be like the definition of his character, but with the way, like, since this is a comedy, with the way you play, if you play the joke right, this whole situation could be funny, which is how I think it went in the comic. Now, that being said, I think the funnier notion about this character is the whole doctor thing. So when he becomes Flatman and tries to be a superhero, he changes his name to Dr. Val Ventura, not actually being a doctor of anything. And eventually his team kind of gets wise to this, where they eventually start asking him questions about, like, what are you a doctor of? Where did you get your doctorate? And this happens because, like, time and time again, he kind of slips up and it becomes clear that he's not actually that smart. Like, especially when interacting with other heroes who are doctors, when they usually, like, they'll go to him and be like, well, what's your opinion on this? Because, they all assume that, well, you're a doctor, you're a superhero, so obviously you're a super scientist of some kind. And he just really drops the ball. Like, he has no business pretending to be a doctor. He is that dumb. Now, not dumb as in, just caveman beating on a rock, but like your average person's intelligence. Like, he could not tell you anything about quantum mechanics or anything like that. I mean, I can't either, but, and I think that would be funnier to focus on. Honestly, in a movie, you could either reveal that he's actually gay as like just something that happens in the background and everyone's just like, no one really says anything about it. You could just have it be obvious where no one has to say anything about it, or you could just not do it and not bring it up at all. Now, I don't think you have to make the character straight. Like, I think he can still be gay. Like, that's, but I'm just saying, like, that doesn't have to be something necessarily brought up. Like, it doesn't have to be a, it doesn't have to be any kind of recurring joke like it was in the comics for a little while. I think the whole doctor thing would play a lot funnier, actually. But that's really it for Flatman. There's really, actually, like, the heart of the joke of the team, I guess. Like, I think that's where a lot of the comedy is probably going to come from. If I had to pick a team to work on this, I would go with Phil Lord and Tim Miller. Like, I think they would be perfect for this. The Russo brothers could do this, but they've already come out and said that after Avengers Endgame, they're pretty much taking a break from Marvel movies, and unless Marvel eventually gets around to doing Secret War, I think. There was another big Marvel comic event storyline, and they said if Marvel ever decides to do that, they'll come back for it. I don't remember what it was. It was either Secret War or Avengers versus X-Men. I'm pretty sure it was Secret War, though, because... So, lastly, we got Doorman. So, Doorman is Damar Davis. He's a young African-American mutant who joined the Great Lakes Avengers after completing 4 years of college and 3 in graduate school. He's very cynical, and he often mockingly compares his team to the real Avengers, feeling understandably embarrassed of them. Yet it's often shown that he still, despite this, he deeply cares about his team. They're embarrassing, but they're family. He has a unique teleportation ability that allows him to make entrances through any substance or structure. It's later revealed that his powers are actually connected to the Dark Force dimension, which I brought up a few episodes ago. Man, I don't even remember my own episodes. Anyway, in the episode about Cloak and Dagger, Cloak's powers are derived from the Dark Force dimension, and so is Doorman's. So, a little continuity there. When I say he can make entrances through structures or substances, it's not as simple as... I mean, it can be as simple as that, but it's not as simple as just, like touching a wall and making a doorway on that wall, and so you can pass through the wall to the other side of that wall. Actually, here's a good example. So, during an encounter with a supervillain that was trying to... who basically took DNA from Big Bertha, because he wanted to... He had some kind of weight loss product that he was trying to manufacture, and he used DNA from Big Bertha to produce it, since she had the ability to basically lose and gain weight at will. He gets caught, and during the confrontation, because I think the stuff is, like, really messed up. It's not ready, so it was, like, messing people's bodies up. So the Great Lake Avengers, Big Bertha gets wind of it and confronts him, and then eventually teams show up to help her, and the guy starts using this untested formula on himself, and he just starts gaining mass, like, uncontrollably, and becomes this huge monster. And so eventually what they do to stop him is Doorman creates a doorway on the guy's body, and Mr. Immortal steps through that doorway into his body and punches his heart to stop him. He punches his heart, kills him, and the guy dies. That's a pretty interesting way to use that power. Now, with his doorway powers, he can take other people can step through it. It's not something like you don't have to hold hands to do it. You can just put up a doorway and you can walk through it, or you can push people through it and they can end up wherever he decides to connect the other side to. His other abilities include intangibility, and when he makes doorways, he can use that doorway to take souls to the afterlife. Now, wrap your heads around that for a second. This guy can basically, and I don't know how close he can get. Like, I don't know if he can actually literally walk the soul all the way there, or if it's more that he can make a doorway to send a soul to the afterlife. But I'm guessing he can go through the doorway too. So basically, this guy can make a one-stop doorway to heaven, basically. Or maybe hell? I mean, there is a hell in the Marvel Universe. I can only assume that there's a heaven, too. Because it wouldn't make sense that there's all these demons running around, but there's no heaven. But apparently this guy can do that. Like, I guess he can just be like, he's like, hey, guys, I'm going to be gone for the weekend. I'm chilling with Jesus. And they're like, oh, you're going to a church thing? He's like, well, I mean, the church. But I don't know if that's something he would really lean on too much in a live action movie. I mean, I'm not really sure where you could go with that, but I mean, hey, it's an option. It'd be pretty cool to see, I think. He can also make, he can fly, but he can do it by making, yeah, so he can make flying skis. I'm not really sure, but that seems like it doesn't really fit the motif, but I mean, you know, whatever. I personally would leave that out, but I mean, hey, flying skis, haven't seen in the in one of the movies yet, so I don't know, maybe you could throw that in. I really like this concept of this team, and I mean, hearing all these weird powers and these kind of strange personalities, with the exception of Dinosaur, who apparently had none, but her aside, I think each of these characters brings something unique to the table, not just in their powers, but in who they are as people. So, as lame as the concept kind of seems on paper, like when you look at the comics, it's like, oh, these guys are a joke. I think that's what kind of make them endearing to audiences. It's like, you see them, you're like, oh, these guys are a joke. But then you get to know them, and you care, and you root for them, and you kind of start to see that, you know, they're like, despite how lame they appear on the surface, they know how, they at least find more interesting ways to solve their problems and use their powers than literally just punching. I mean, granted, the last example I gave was Mr. Immortal punching a guy in the heart, but how did he get to that heart? That was the cool part, you know what I mean? So, and I mean, obviously they wouldn't go around killing, you know, just diving into people's body. I mean, you can't. The only reason why that whole situation worked was because the guy was large enough for someone to actually, like, be able to fit inside of his body. So that was an extreme situation. But still, that's, I feel like that's not only a good example of how Doorman's powers work, but it's a cool example of something you could possibly see in a movie about these characters. Like, I think stories about these guys are still very viable in comic form. I think you just need to get a dedicated writer-artist team on that who can do comedy, like, dramatic comedy stories. And, again, mostly comedy, but with the ability to kind of, like, you know, when you have those moments that aren't jokes, you know, kind of slowly kind of flesh out these characters and who they are and, you know, show us their quirks and their likes and dislikes and, you know, all that stuff, kind of get into them. So, because that's only going to make the comedy work more going forward. And then, you know, also, as far as the writer goes and as far as the artist goes, you need someone who, I would, you know, action isn't necessarily the name of the game, but when it's time for action scenes, you want someone who can draw a cool looking action scene. Even though, like I said, it'd be mostly comedic stuff, but not like Looney Tunes comedic, just like, you know, story-wise comedic. Their stories should really be more about the personal lives of the team and expanding on their origins and what makes them who they currently are, and their personality and how their personalities, like, bounce off each other, how they interact. I mean, I know this is, like, basic storytelling stuff. It's like, yeah, that's what you want in really any story. But this is superhero comics, and I think the superhero stuff should be like, people should be coming for the characters and then staying for, like, the cool fights between weird random villains that pop up, because I think expanding on the characters would kind of help give cues as to, like, ways they would use their powers. It would kind of, like, I feel like it would be a creative opportunity for anyone who wanted to take a property and kind of put their stamp on it, I guess. If you're curious about these guys and you want a little taste of the Great Lakes Avengers, Volume 1 is out, and that was, yeah, it came out last year, and that contains issues 1 through 7. I'd honestly like to see this comic thrive on its own, like, before it became a live-action thing, but looking at how things have been working lately, it seems like you get a movie, and then your comic thrives. But, I mean, like I said, the comic book could be doing a lot better than it is right now. If it's even still being made, I think it is. But I would honestly prefer a better comic version first. But, you know, I'll take whichever. And for now, I'll take a little step back into back issues. All right, so we're reaching the tail end of this thing here. We had a couple of trailers come out recently, so I'll get into those. So first up is the Men in Black International trailer. This movie doesn't look as fresh and new as I was expecting, but it still looks fun. And that's actually a good thing. Like, I think for some reason I was expecting them to, like, really reboot this whole thing. But it actually looks, despite the change of lead characters, it still looks like a movie where Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones could show up. I'm not saying they should or they will, because I don't think they are. But it looks like that same universe. And I actually like that. I think the only thing that really got laid out in the trailer was that Tessa Thompson's character, for some reason, was tracking down the Men in Black and found them and was basically being demanding to join since she was capable of doing that. Like, apparently, she was basically like, well, you're supposed to be the world's most best guarded secret, and I uncovered you by myself. I think that gets me a spot in. I found it weird. Michael Jackson has a cameo in the second Men in Black movie. And I thought it was odd that Tessa Thompson's character, like, for some reason, like, I don't know if it's just, I think it's just the way her hair is. Because when she was in Thor, I didn't think this at all. But if you look at the Men in Black trailer, the way her hair is, it kind of makes her look like Michael Jackson. And then her character's name is Agent M. Now, I don't know if that's some kind of, like, in-joke or what. I just found that odd. So that, you know, that's probably nothing. It's just, you know, something that crossed my mind when I was watching the trailer. Next up is, it's not a trailer, but the some images came out for the Disney live action Aladdin movie. And we finally get to see Will Smith in his genie costume. I'm not really that invested in a live action version of Aladdin. It looks fine. Like, I'm not against it or whatever. It's just, I haven't really been gassed up for these live action versions of their animated movies. But I will say that Will Smith's genie costume, like, the look of it, looks good. It looks fine. That was the one thing I was actually, like, had my curiosity for that movie. Because I was like, what is he going to look like? And, yeah, they found something that works. Now, unfortunately, well, I don't know if it's unfortunate or not, but, like, in the photos of Will Smith, he's not blue. And it works. I think it's fine. But then later, I think he came out in a Twitter post, and they said that he's actually, for the movie, he is going to be blue. I feel like that might be a mistake. Now, they could do it, and it could look fine, but I feel like he looks good the way he is. Like, just let him be black. Like, I don't see why that matters. I don't see why he has to be blue. I mean, I get this is a live-action version of their cartoon, and Robin Williams' genie was blue. But then also, he's not Robin Williams, so, like, I don't see why he has to be blue. I think you could just leave him the way he is. So, I guess when a trailer comes out, we'll see what that looks like. But once I saw the picture, I was like, well, that's good. I'm kind of glad they didn't go blue, but apparently they're planning to. So, yeah, we'll see. Oh, and I guess, again, not another... Oh, I thought I had... Oh, there's another movie trailer. I'll get into that next, since I made the promise. So the Hellboy reboot trailer finally came out. I think the music for the trailer is kind of off. Like, it makes it kind of hard to figure the tone, because the visuals look fun, but, like, with a bit of danger in there. But then the song is, like, this upbeat song, and I know the song. I've heard it before, but I just can't think of what it's called, and I didn't care to look it up. But, yeah, check out the trailer and see for yourself. But, like, yeah, it kind of threw me off. So, I mean, it's just a trailer. It doesn't necessarily dictate, you know, everything about the movie. But, I don't know, I was expecting them to go for just, like, a straight-up kind of, not, like, horror, but, like, just more along the tone of the comic. Like, I thought that was the whole point of this reboot to begin with. And while the movie could be that, I don't see why you wouldn't showcase that in your trailer. Like, why would your first trailer be like this, trying to make it seem like it's a fun, rompy monster fighting movie? It just seemed weird to me. Oh, and then I guess lastly, I will say the Into the Spider-Verse movie. I saw that Tuesday, or last Tuesday, and it really blew me away. Like, when I saw the trailers and everything, it looked good. I was excited to see it. But then it turned out to be better than what I expected it to be. I'd honestly say it's the best Spider-Man movie I've seen since his appearance in Civil War. Because, you know, I'll be honest, Spider-Man Homecoming was fine. But I believe the success of that movie leaned more on Michael Keaton's performance as the Vulture. And Tom Holland as Spider-Man. Like, he's good in that role. He's very likable, very much feels like a young Peter Parker, but I think Michael Keaton's performance as a Vulture is really what elevated that movie. But other than that, it was really kind of so-so. Not terrible, just kind of like, you know, a C+, kind of. It didn't really wow me. It was fun to watch. It was a fun movie, do not get me wrong. I'm not saying that it was boring. It's just, you know, waiting that long to see him in the MCU, I almost expected more. And I'm not sure what that more is. But, well, I wasn't sure until I saw Into the Spider-Verse. Now it's like, yeah, this would have been, this was great. So I would say more about the movie itself. But, like, that could be a whole episode by itself. I'll just say, you know, in my opinion, go see it. Don't miss it. It's very much worth seeing. And on the tailbone of that, apparently Sony has already decided to do a sequel to Into the Spider-Verse and a Spider-Woman team-up movie, which would feature Spider-Gwen, which is the Gwen Stacy alternate universe version of Spider-Woman, the actual Spider-Woman, but the Jessica Drew version, you know, the Spider-Woman with the red and yellow outfit. Now, granted, her red and yellow outfit has changed in more recent years, so it's not like the skin-tight, full-body suit that it used to be. It's kind of a, it's more like a, it's still red and yellow and black, but it's more of like a, sneaking suit kind of situation. It's pretty cool. I like it. I think it's a good update. And then the third person in the team-up is, Silk, who is a more recent character. She's, Asian-American. I believe her story is basically she got bit by the same spider that Peter Parker got bit by at the same time, but then she just laid low and then only recently started using her powers. And then for some reason, her powers are different, even though they got bit by the same spider, but, you know, comics, whatever. They also are thinking about doing a Spider-Ham movie, and though they haven't said it, I'm hoping that they do a Spider-Man Noir spinoff. Because Nick Cage as Spider-Man Noir was on point. They didn't use him too much. They used him just enough. And what he did do was amazing. He was basically like Spider-Man, but if he were Batman. Or he was Spider-Man if he were Batman and crazy. Now, granted, giving him his own movie might be too much. But then again, it's been a while since I've been really excited to see Nick Cage, you know, just kind of do his own thing. And I think he'd be great as his character in his own movie. I think he could do it. So, let me see if there's anything else. Nope, that's it. That's the last of that. So, what do you think of the Great Lakes Avengers? I think there's potential there. As I was doing research on these guys, which I heard of them. They weren't that obscure to me. I've actually had, there's an issue of Deadpool where he has an encounter with these guys during Civil War, where he's trying to bring them in, and middle, he finds out that they've already registered with the government, and they kind of knock him around. And at first, it kind of made me mad, because I was like, how did Deadpool get beat by these guys? But then when you see it, you kind of understand. Like, it's like, okay, see, they are a joke, they are kind of funny, they are kind of losers, but, you know, they're losers together, and they manage to, you know, they can manage a win. So, you know, that kind of garnered them a bit of respect in my book. This is the last episode of 2018. I think I'm going to take a break next week. So next Tuesday, there probably won't be an episode. And then the following Tuesday, there will be. Just because the first episode that I do for 2019 is going to be a little bit long. This one actually might be long too, but, you know, I think I can push them a little bit longer. I was trying to keep things more condensed, but I think that's just a matter of editing. So we'll see. But either way, the first episode is going to be like kind of similar to the special I did way back about the Cops cartoon, which was, as I found out, was a comic that became a cartoon. And so episode one of 2019 will be similar, where it's a comic that got turned into a cartoon. So look forward to that. Maybe it'll be super long. Maybe it'll be just long enough. We'll see. Until then, I'm your host, Tony, and I'll see you next year. Oh, also, you might have noticed that the logo is a little bit different. I'm also working on changing the theme song. I've just got to, like, tweak the audio because it came out kind of weird. So hopefully when I do the first episode of 2019, we'll have a new logo and a new theme song. So I'll see you then. Later, everybody.